Happy Monday, Tappers. Let's go. It is Monday, May 14th. How are we all doing? We're ready to start another week here on the Daily Tap. Some of you, the young Tappers, might be having finals week. Some of you may be starting your summer. If you are the latter, fuck you. I am jealous. And that is a good way to start a Monday. What's going on, guys? Charlie here with you as always. Kind of, it's been a rough week for the podcast, and I blame myself a little bit. I was in Green Bay on business on Friday. I was going to do like an audio thing, do it on my phone, get Mitch or Murph to upload it, and then I just didn't do it because I was obviously lazy. I don't know. Maybe I should be doing vlogging while I'm on the road. Who the hell knows? Then I was like, well, on Sunday, I got up early, like didn't go out on Saturday night, had a great evening with Morgan, and I was like, okay, do an early pod. You know, we have Frey Peralta to talk about, we have Cavs Celtics, we have, you know, there's enough going on in the morning that let's go, let's fire it up, you know, take the podcast to your Mother's Day brunch. I was also going to talk about how brunch is overrated and how I've solved brunch, and I think more people should adopt my plan for brunch. But we'll lay that out on another day. I have these topics that are just kind of floating out there when June and July hit, when shit just goes crazy. So yes, should we have done a little bit more? Absolutely. Are we getting back in the saddle today? You bet your ass we are. And we're going to be here all week. There is no stopping us. I am maybe going back tonight podcasting. It's very late right now. And it's mostly because I have a ton of energy because I actually slept a lot this weekend. Didn't drink on Saturday. So I feel like I could probably be up till 3 o'clock working. I'm probably not going to do that because I actually have another job. But let me know if you guys are regular listeners, can someone let me know if they prefer to have these podcasts up late at night so it's ready for them at 6 or 7 a.m. in the morning, or if it doesn't really matter and you're like, I get to it when I get to it at the office, and that's all that matters. But all right. SnowTap WI is where you can find us. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We had a great weekend on SnowTap. A lot of weekend blogging. Probably the best weekend blogging we've done in quite some time. Check out our post about Jair Alexander. That did really well for us. On Instagram, SnowTap WI, we had the Giannis, the jacket, the Greek Freak clothing line, the Stay Freaky. Things doing real well on the Instagram. So give it a like if you haven't already. Make sure you check us out there on Instagram, SnowTap WI. Hopefully you guys are already there. And we also are on Facebook, Twitter, you know the whole deal. Subscribe, iTunes, Twitter, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, all those fun stuff. But it is time to talk about the young god, Freddy Peralta. So Freddy Peralta went to the mound for the Milwaukee Brewers this afternoon, and Freddy did the damn thing. He struck out 13 batters. He allowed one hit. He walked two in almost six innings of work. It was an absolutely masterful performance. And I think the expectation, the bar was pretty high on Peralta heading into this game. I mean, he's the first starter since Giovanni Gallardo to pitch prior to his 22nd birthday in the major leagues for the Milwaukee Brewers. Peralta had a decent amount of hype coming into him, but this guy has been a fast mover through the minor league ranks. He was at single-A ball at this time last year, as Jeff Levering pointed out on the broadcast today. But Peralta just, it didn't faze him that he was facing Charlie Blackman, Nolan Arenado, Trevor Story, who was absolutely massive against the Brewers except for tonight. And the Brewers held on to a 7-3 victory. They win 3 of 4 against the Rockies. They are now the sole possessors of first place in the National League Central. That is a great accomplishment for the Brewers. And Peralta looks like a guy who should be sticking around for the future. Mitch made a comment on Twitter, Mitch Ross MKE, for those who don't follow him, said, you know, it's going to be the worst when Peralta gets called down tomorrow. And I told him, he fucking sucks. Because if Willie Peralta, that's going to happen. There is going to be some Willie Freddy slips. If Freddy Peralta gets called down after that performance, then Craig Counsell should be on the hot seat immediately. And I don't think he is, because Counsell laughed at it, that question. He said, we're going to find a spot for Freddy. Basically saying that Freddy Peralta has a role on this team, at least for another start, if not a couple more, because he does look dominant. I understand there may be some pitch count concerns, but he's a guy who, even if there were pitch count concerns, could add to an already dynamic bullpen for the Milwaukee Brewers. So Peralta is an absolute stud. I cannot speak in more platitudes about him, because he was that dominant. Like, anything that you expected about Freddy today went to a whole other level. And like I said on Twitter today, this is a Freddy Peralta fan account. And Freddy is the new kind of it thing for a little bit. I mean, I think he'll probably pitch Wednesday, or Friday probably, right? If you're doing the kind of the math or putting it all together, Chase Anderson or Junior Guerra is going tomorrow. Chase Anderson, I believe, is going on Tuesday, and then you have Woodruff on Wednesday. Now, Suter probably goes on Friday, and I guess Peralta would go on Saturday, barring that Zach Davies doesn't come back from injury in any of that point. But it's an exciting time. It's a very exciting time, because this is the first of many young pitchers that could be ready for the Brewers, and you could look at this formative, dominant young pitching staff. I mean, Corbin Burns has, you know, shown the stuff to be ready to go, and he's probably the next in line. You got Thomas Jenkins, who's in Double A, but he's been pitching his ass off so far. Trey Supkick, he's a few years behind, but he's also going to be really good. I mean, the Brewers have countless young pitchers that are going to be ready to roll for this team, and I know that there is a lot of, you know, jostling about, the Brewers should trade for a starter. They should really trade for a starter. I'm down with it if it makes sense. But let me tell you, they have guys who are going to be ready to be frontline pitchers. And Freddy Peralta looked like a frontline pitcher. I don't want to like overreact and be like, Freddy is the future. Have that be the podcast title, because that's too early. You don't want to crown his ass. I mean, Steve Woodard struck out 12 against Roger Clemens in his major league debut, which Peralta broke that record. But if I remember correctly, we all thought Steve Woodard was like he was going to save the Brewers. And Steve Woodard had some good years. Don't get me wrong, but he didn't really amount to shit for Milwaukee. Now Peralta has, I think Peralta has a very high ceiling. I think there is a it's going to take him a couple times around for people to really get a book on him. So I think he has a long term shelf right now as a major league pitcher. You can tell all the guys in the locker room really embraced him. Just the amount of hugs, and Jesus Aguilar basically saying like he was next to Manny Pena and said, I could have cried when him looking at his parents, who his parents saw him for the pitch for the first time ever in a professional baseball game. Just an absolutely amazing moment. This Brewers weekend has definitely had a few of the top moments of the year, and I look forward to more Peralta pitching. So I did mention the Brewers were in first place, and I may have said last Monday, are we sure the Brewers are good? And I had a feeling, and it wasn't like I was trying to reverse jinx them, because I don't know. They go, of course, they win 5 of their next 7. They have been playing really good baseball. Offenses came alive. You've had the Brewers score 5 or more runs in, 3 of the 4 games, all the games they won, and then a 0. There is an issue with left-handed pitchers, I worry. I think that Craig Counsell needs to really look at what they're doing against left-handers, because so far it's not been working. Patrick Corbin, a lefty tonight, could be a real issue for Milwaukee, and that might be a topic for tomorrow if Corbin does go out and dominate the Brewers. But they're starting to really put it together on the offensive side of things. And I think, you know, it was basically kind of what I saw at Tapping the Keg. I was like, Coors Field could wake up the bats, and it definitely did. Guy like Travis Shaw is absolutely rolling right now. He had another home run yesterday. He's up to 9. Jesus Aguilar is becoming a mainstay at first base, almost to the point where – and Domingo Santana's hitting the ball again. Domingo's had a couple good games, so Craig Counsell's kind of working with the rotation. Ryan Braun's been actually low-key struggling. He's not really been hitting the ball too well. I don't know when we have to have the awkward conversation about, are we sure Ryan Braun's a three-hitter anymore, because we are inching closer. We're not there yet. Ryan's had some big hits this year, don't get me wrong. But we are inching our way closer to, are we sure Ryan Braun isn't a six-hitter? And that is an overreaction because Ryan's been struggling and you have to really evaluate where does he fit in this order at this point. So yes, I probably overreacted. And I think what happens with baseball is a sport filled with overreactions. Like look right now at the Los Angeles Dodgers. They got swept by the Cincinnati Reds. They are 8 games under .500. People are like, are the Dodgers going to miss the playoffs? Now, if the metrics bear out, yes, the Dodgers will miss the playoffs because you kind of just a month can make or break your season. Dodgers are having a bad May, and it can make and break a season. That said, you can get really hot on another season and completely cancel it out and give yourself a chance. Dodgers have enough talent to do that. Obviously, without guys like Clayton Kershaw, Justin Turner, you're going to be missing some big bodies. So the Brewers the Brewers are bad last week, I think the Rockies, this was a signature series for Milwaukee. Milwaukee needed this series because this is a good team. This is a team who was a wild card team last year. They're right behind Arizona for the NL West lead, and the Brewers kicked their ass. I mean, besides Saturday, which I wouldn't even say was an ass kick. It was an ass kicking on Colorado's behalf. It was just Trevor Story couldn't get out. Brett Suter couldn't get him out. And because he couldn't get him out, Story hit the ball very far. Other than that, I mean, the Brewers did all right. They played the Rockies to more of a stalemate than they may get credit for. And yes, today was more of a blowout, and the Rockies got a few homers down the stretch. But, I mean, so what? So the Brewers look good. And I mean, the Diamondbacks are another test. And if you don't win 2 out of 3 against Arizona, I'm not going to be knocking down your door. I mean, they have to face Corbin. They have to face Greinke. Greinke kind of been low-key bad against lefties this year, but he pitched really well against the Nationals a couple days ago. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's one of those things, man, where we can't necessarily, like, I learned my lesson. I learned my lesson to say, yes, this Brewer team is good. I'll only start panicking if they start losing multiple games. If they lose one series, it's not the end of the world. I try to be better than the Pinheads, but sometimes I lower myself to them, and that's what happens. So I apologize. Brewers are good. Looking forward to being in first place. It's nice to look over all of them instead of being tied with the Cardinals or tied with the Cubs. And it's a jam-packed NL Central, and it's, I think, going to be that way for a while. Definitely a discussion topic, but the Brewers are looking pretty good through 40 games. Moving on to the NBA. So we had the Boston Celtics lay an absolute beating. I've said, I got to watch my absolutes, guys. I say absolute way too much. That's just a problem. But they laid the smacketh down on LeBron's candy ass. 108-83, an absolute shit pump. Shout out to Part of My Take. By the Boston Celtics, who keep their home court alive, look great. I mean, Brad Stevens did the wrinkle of putting Marcus Morris into the starting lineup to guard LeBron James. He had 15 points, 9 assists, 7 boards. He was a minus 32 in the PER. He missed all 5 of his 3-pointers. The Cavs, in fact, were 4-for-26 from 3. Just terrible. And the Celtics did what the Celtics have done all season. Or all playoffs, excuse me, is they've had multiple guys with 20 or more points. Marcus Morris, Al Horford, and Jaylen Brown were those guys. And they all of their PERs were plus 14 or higher for all their starters. Two guys off the bench, Smart and Baines, were in the plus 15 or higher. Just an amazing effort by the Boston Celtics, who obviously had the defense to keep up with LeBron. And that is going to be a definite talking point heading into Game 2 on Tuesday night. Can LeBron figure out what Brad Stevens is doing? Because just like it was with Giannis versus Brad Stevens, it's LeBron versus Brad Stevens. And I think they're using some of the things they did with Giannis in Game 7 to sort of Game 7 and Game 5. Because Giannis had a great Game 6, don't get me wrong. But they were definitely frustrating Giannis in both those games. And I think some of the stuff that Stevens is doing, he's doing again to LeBron. And he frustrated the absolute hell out of him. Now, granted, and Marcus Morris has a ton of confidence playing LeBron. He's like, I feel like I'm the second best next to Kawhi. I feel like I'm the second best defender to guard James. And now Marcus Morris's irrational confidence gets him into trouble a lot. That said, this is a good time for irrational confidence when he's using it, channeling it on defense. Brad Stevens will take irrational confidence on defense. So we'll see what happens in game two. I don't think the Cavs will shoot that bad again, but there's something brewing here with this Celtics team, man. And yes, does this change your perspective on the Bucks and how the season went? That might be a topic for Mitch and I on Wednesday. So look forward to that as a potential podcast topic. Because if Celtics do take the first two here, I think we do have to talk about how the fact the Bucks were a few bounces away from eliminating a Celtics team now up 2-0 on LeBron. Moving over to the West, that starts tonight. We will talk a little bit about recapping it on Tuesday. But a interesting way to start with the Rockets at home to face the Warriors. It is the, I don't know when this has been, probably since the Cleveland series, right? Where Golden State has started a series on the road. Vegas, I'm getting that real quick. Vegas likes the Rockets by just a point. Over-under is 224, so strap in. Should be a lot of fun between these two teams. And I'm not a huge Rockets fan. I've said that I'm kind of pulling for the Warriors here. I do kind of want to see Houston win game one because I feel like if the Warriors steal game one out the gates, then it could be a little troublesome for Houston. And I think Golden State knows this too. Golden State understands that this game means way more to Houston. They can afford to drop game one because they know they can steal game two and then be up 3-1 before it heads back to H-Town. That said, if they win tonight, then it all the pressure goes to Houston for game two because you do not want to go down 2-0. Houston's had Golden State's number this year. I mean, they are 2-1. They played really well at home against the Warriors. The Houston crowd has to be more than lifeless. They are at threat level Miami levels right now. I know Bill Simmons is banged on this, but it's true. I mean, you need to have a good crowd. I mean, that is part of the Celtics' allure right now is the fact their crowds have been just absolutely bonkers. Warriors' crowds are always crazy. The Rockets probably have the worst fan base out of the four right now, and it's not even close. Like, Cleveland, Boston, and Golden State all have just great fan bases, and they all have got all fan bases who get very loud during games. Houston really doesn't. They need to find some of that. And I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know if it's Hakeem Olajuwon. I don't know if it's Clyde Drexler. But they need some juice in that building tonight, because if they don't and the Warriors play it like their playground, good luck, man. They looked dominant in the last couple of games down the stretch with the Pelicans, where they just did classic Warriors things. And so if the Rockets can come out, put the foot on the throat a little bit, it'll be good. I mean, they've struggled in those game ones too. I mean, so yes, we'll see what happens tonight. I still like the Warriors. I think the Warriors win in six. I didn't give a prediction for Celtics Cavs. I actually like the Celtics in seven. So I'm going to stick with that. I may have said that out the jump. You may not believe me. I don't really give a shit. I like the Celtics. I don't really want to see Warriors Cavs round three. I know a lot of people do. I don't. Murph does because he's a cocksucker like that. I'm just kidding. It's just paying attention, just seeing if he's listening this late. All right, guys, take care. Love you. Talk tomorrow. SnowtapWI. Find us on all the channels. Subscribe on whatever way you get our podcast. Yes, I was slapping my thigh while doing that. Give you a little sexy visual to end your Monday. Later.